is A18-1373 in the matter of Naomi Ray Marks versus Matthew Douglas MacArthur. Are the attorneys here? And counsel, when you're ready, you may approach the podium. It goes up and down. Please state your name for the record as you begin your argument. You'll each have 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Good morning, Your Honors. Seamus Mahoney appearing on behalf of the appellant, Matthew MacArthur. Good morning, counsel. Your Honors, we're here today because the appellant has been labeled a domestic abuser, essentially, by the finding of the court. And this is an injustice for Mr. MacArthur. Mr. MacArthur was in his own home on a Sunday morning. It was the day that a mentor of his had died on the chef, and he was quietly having a Sunday morning when the respondent started to make aggressive moves towards Mr. MacArthur's property, in this case, his phone.
Well, they had an argument about who was going to look at whose phone, right?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
They had an argument about who was going to look at whose phone.
There was an argument about the respondent having access to the appellant's phone. And the appellant is saying, no, this is my phone, you can't have it. The respondent is insisting that she have access to it. She runs to his bedroom and tries to get the phone. He intersects her and keeps the phone. He tries to calm things down, sits on the couch, puts the phone down on his right. She's sitting to his left. She leaps over him to get the phone. They fall on the floor. He holds her down. She
There's
gets
a struggle,
her
right?
Pardon me?
There's a struggle, right?
It's There's not, a struggle, yes,
not
Your
just
Honor.
A
the struggle is
here.
That the respondent is still trying to get the phone. And that is her focus, as I recall her testimony.
Well, doesn't it take two parties to struggle? It seems that that's the district court's findings, that both parties were struggling.
Oh, Your Honor, I
fact,
believe...
That's how I read your brief as well, is acknowledging that there was a struggle.
Oh, yes, Your Honor. The respondent is a woman of about 110 pounds, and the appellant is about 5'11 and 190 or something like that. He's a much bigger man. He's on top. There's no question about that. He's not struggling in the sense of his testimony, as I recall, was that he was like holding her down until she stopped trying to get his phone, which is essentially someone trying to take my watch, right?
And I understand that you're making an argument that the district court should have heard or considered your defense to property.
Well,
Your as
Honor,
an affirmative, but I want to make sure. It looks to me like you raised two issues on appeal.
Yes, Your Honor, we
and
do.
And one, it looks to me to be a sufficiency of the evidence. Is that basically what you mean by the first issue?
Yes, Your Honor, sufficiency of the evidence.
Okay.
The second issue, I understand there's lots of case law saying that that is a criminal a common law that you can't bring into a civil order of protection case, which begs the question is, if you're in your own home, and you have a intimate visitor who's been over for the night, and that person's trying to take your property, do you have a right to stop them? Apparently, you don't. If you can be found to have, in defending your property, be accused of domestic abuse.
Well, do you agree, does the appellant agree that there was a physical harm or bodily injury sustained by the respondent?
Your Honor, I have I believe it was acknowledged that following the struggle for the phone, that the respondent had rug burns on her back.
So correct? That's a physical injury.
Physical injury, yes.
And that the physical injury came as a result of the struggle that Judge Bratvold is talking about.
Right.
It looks to me like, as domestic abuse is defined under subdivision 2A of 518B01, that's enough to amount to domestic abuse whether or not he was trying to get his property back. That is, domestic abuse means, if committed by a family or household member, physical harm, bodily injury, or assault.
Right. Which begs the question, as comes back around again, Your Honor, is like, if the statute can be applied in such a way within, when you're in your own home and you can't protect your property to the degree of restraining somebody, they get injuries because they initiated the incident. There's no question that that is the respondent that initiated it. So I'm attacked. The attacker may well be afraid, having attacked me.
Do we have any evidence in this case? We're not talking about a physical attack on the appellant, right?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, she physically tried to go over him to get at the
right, but she wasn't punching him or lunging at him with a knife or something like that.
That's true, Your Honor. That's true. He wasn't. He wasn't having to defend himself.
He was defending
personally.
His property.
Right, his property.
Right, but if, and I understand if I were drafting 518B01 subdivision 2A, I might have defined it differently myself. But I'm taking it as it is. I'm reading it as it is.
Right.
And what I see is a concession that there was physical harm and bodily injury, that it came as a result of this incident with the appellant. And under the statute, it seems like that's domestic abuse.
Well, and maybe that's so, Your Honor. But at the same time, if let's say Ms. Marks had leapt over Mr. MacArthur to get this property and injured herself. I mean, essentially, she caused this injury to occur. That's the whole conundrum about this.
That wouldn't be a physical harm or bodily injury committed against her by a family or household member. That would be a physical injury she sustained as a result of her own actions.
I'm sorry, I missed the first part.
Your hypothetical is not one where her physical harm or bodily injury results from actions of a family or household member. It's one where her injuries result from her own actions.
And, Your Honor, and that's essentially our argument, because she initiated this. She came at him. She came, tried to go through him to get his property. And that's the problem. I understand the statute makes no reference to any intent. So it could have been done accidentally. So he's not an... And if that's the case...
I think that's what the statute... The plain reading of the statute is exactly that, the way I read it.
Okay. And if that is the limitation of the statute, that there's no way to read in any kind of intent, that this could be the result of an accident, then I suppose the injustice will stand, because Mr...
Well, counsel, I just want to interrupt you briefly to make sure that you understand our role, right?
Yes, John.
Is to interpret... and to apply the statute as it has been written by the legislature.
Okay.
So for us, we can't simply read in an intent requirement that isn't there. So you'd have to give us some basis on which to find in your favor.
Okay, Your Honor.
So if you can do that, then I'm ready to listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in terms of then we have to get back to the essential facts. If the only issue is there's harm and she was an intimate partner, well, I guess the injustice will stand until we get the legislature to at least make some effort to put a level of intent into this. I mean, at the time, the referee said this is a close call. She'd made... had mentioned none of the other elements of the facts involving the role of the respondent, the initiation by the respondent, the taunting of the respondent after this incident with the photograph, saying, ha, ha, ha. It's clearly the respondent who has created this situation, and the we would argue, I suppose, that the application of the right to protect your property in your own home should apply in this case.
And if you could point us to a legal basis for that right, you know, you've mentioned, of course, the criminal statutes and
right.
the criminal recognition in the criminal statutes, a recognition of certain affirmative defenses.
Right.
But we're not in a criminal action.
I know.
And we aren't involved with those offenses. So again, this court will apply
right.
the statutes as written by the legislature. So you'd have to give us some basis for recognizing such an affirmative defense, which, to my knowledge, has never been recognized.
Well, Your Honor, I suppose it's in terms of affirmative defense. I see it as sort of a common law, old, you know, based on the concept of you have a right to protect yourself and your property, and I would think that that is a reasonable, logical part of how the law should, you know, see people's property. That you have a right to defend it, and whether you have used it as a defense for murder or for the allegation that you have assaulted somebody, and I suppose in this case been the instigator of the injury. And again, I think that comes back to that she's the instigator of the injury. She's the one who caused the injury. She was the one struggling against him to get his property. And he was not the instigator, and he was not the one who inflicted the injury on her. She inflicted the injury on herself as she lay on the ground, continuing to try to reach for the phone. That's where this rug burn comes from. He's not trying to hurt her.
What
He's not trying to inflict any injury on
her.
Where
did the bruises come from, counsel?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Where did the bruises come from?
Oh, that would have been if
So she did
imagine.
That to herself, too?
From the back as she's mm-hmm. laying on the ground, and she's trying to get to his phone, and he's saying, "Comp, stop, just leave it, you know, go."
So, counsel, these are all arguments that, of course, you know, you were well within your ability and to present those to the finder of fact at the evidentiary hearing, who's the district court, you know,
right.
and you did.
Right.
So at this point, our scope of review and standard of review isn't very favorable to you on re-arguing that, those facts and that defense.
Okay.
Unless, again, you can point us to a legal error in
All right.
the district court's reasoning.
And, Your Honor, I appreciate that. I can't think of – I don't have a legal error in the okay. in the statute that I can point to. I guess I'm looking more for a some justice for my client, mm-hmm. just unjust. And now he has this – I mean, he was given the opportunity. You can accept the no-contact order or you can find one for you, right? I mean, that was his choice. The subsequent consequences of that are he can't have a firearm. He's now, you know, sort of when someone does a background check, they see the blemish on him, and it's just it's an abuse of the system by the respondent. It's just an injustice against Mr. MacArthur. I understand the court's position, and I'll rest my argument. Thank you.
You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brittany Miller, and I am the attorney for Ms. Marks, who is the respondent in this matter. I will try to keep my argument as brief as possible, but I did want to clarify a couple of points that counsel raised in his argument. He continues to claim that Ms. Marks was the aggressor, the one who initiated this incident, and I just wanted to clarify that the order of events is actually Mr. MacArthur asked to see text messages on Ms. Marks' phone, on her cell phone, and then this argument started over, you know, wanting each other's cell phones and wanting to view each other's text messages. So it was actually Mr. MacArthur who raised the issue in the first place.
I don't think we really even need to go down that whole fact-specific road, do we? Asked who to see whose phone first?
Your Honor, you're correct.
I mean, at that point, if that's all that had happened, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
You're 100% correct. I just wanted to clarify, just for the purposes of pointing out that she wasn't the aggressor. And in this instance, obviously Ms. Marks didn't force Mr. MacArthur to do anything. She did not cause her own injuries. She had bruises on her back. She had bruises on her shoulder. She had an open wound on her shoulder. Mr. MacArthur had many different ways to handle the situation if he truly felt that his property was being threatened. And, you know, counsel tries to draw a lot of similarities to these criminal cases. As Your Honors have pointed out, we're not in a criminal proceeding. This is a civil proceeding. And even if the court decided, okay, we'll extend this this defense to civil orders for protection, Mr. MacArthur couldn't avail himself of the defense because his use of force, which he admits, was not reasonable in light of the perceived threat. There's no evidence that Ms. MacArthur or Ms. Marks was trying to or threatening to damage his property. She was simply trying to access his cell phone. And so in that circumstance, I don't think that there would be any way that Mr. MacArthur could even avail himself of that defense if it was available to him, which it is not in the civil order for protection case. And then I would just like to point out, too, that from a public policy perspective, if the court were to adopt Mr. MacArthur's argument, or I'm sorry, counsel's argument, we would be going down a road where, you know, it's almost that look at what you made me do. I mean, Mr. MacArthur is blaming Ms. Marks for her own injuries that he caused. And I think that undermines the purpose of the Domestic Abuse Act, which is to protect survivors of domestic violence. So I don't see how we could have a defense of property defense and at the same time uphold the purpose of the Domestic Abuse Act. I think those two are incompatible, and I think it would be contrary to the purpose of the act to prioritize property over victims of domestic abuse. And then I'll just point out, too, there's been a lot of focus on the bodily harm, bodily injury, physical harm, or assault piece of the Domestic Abuse Act. But there's actually three different definitions of domestic abuse. That's just one. And under Thompson v. Schrimsher, which is the most recent Minnesota Supreme Court case on this issue, the court said if you find any one of those definitions, you can grant an order for protection. So here the court actually found that Mr. MacArthur committed two acts of domestic abuse that meet the statute. So even if counsel's arguments are accepted and bodily injury is thrown out, you can still go to the second definition, which is he inflicted fear of imminent physical harm. And there was this incident. Ms. Marks testified to other incidents where Mr. MacArthur, you know, as he admits, has a much more, he's bigger than Ms. Marks. His physical presence is, you know, he's much stronger than she is. And there were other incidents where he showed physical aggression and got physical with her. There was a vacation where that occurred. Ms. Marks also testified at length that she was still in fear of him, didn't know what he was capable of doing. The fact that he owned a gun scared her. And she not only told the court this, but it's in the medical records. She was telling physicians that she was in fear of him, and it's in the police report. She was telling the police officers that she was in fear of him. So I think that addresses the concern over sufficiency of evidence. I think there was plenty here for the court to grant the order for protection.
Well, I suppose I can't really speak for Mr. Mahoney and his client, but I suppose if we were going to import a defense of property defense into subdivision 1A1, there's no reason why we wouldn't similarly import it into 1A2, relative to the infliction of fear of physical harm. That is to say, you could say, give me that back or I'll wring your neck. If we were going to import that defense, it would probably apply to all of those bases.
And that's fine. But in this case, there were other incidents, not just this one.
I understand that. I'm just responding to the question of the district court did find the infliction of fear of whatever I can't get all the statutory words correctly. But I think Mr. Mahoney would say, he may say that on rebuttal, I don't know, but if he was trying to defend his property, and if that's a defense to a finding of domestic abuse, it presumably would apply to that as well.
And again, I think that's why, with especially the Thompson case, the Minnesota Supreme Court said it's really important to look at context. This isn't some stranger over at Mr. MacArthur's home. It's a significant other. And he testified about the extent of their relationship. They were going to couples therapy together. So you have to look at what's going on in that context. It's not as if someone just broke down his door and tried to steal his phone. And that's why I think the domestic abuse statute, I think that's where it comes in. And that's why the district court has so much discretion, because they have to look at these situations and say, is there a power dynamic that's, being abused? Is there a power dynamic, and is someone asserting control over their significant other?
To be fair, though, the district court's findings are only about what happened on June 8th.
Yes, that's correct.
That's all that the district court found. The district court didn't find, not suggesting one thing or the other about these other allegations, but the district court didn't find them.
And that's correct, Your Honor. But also the district court, the district court's order is quite short. And it found
as they are, because these cases, as a former, I think we're all former district court judges. These are filled in on a fill-in-the-blank form, and that next case 15 minutes later, and away we go.
Yes, Your Honor. I would just also like to point out, though, that the court specifically found Ms. Mark's testimony credible, and she did testify to these other incidents. And unless the court has further questions, I believe that's all I have.
I don't.
Thank you.
Mr. Mahoney, do you wish to respond? I have a question for you.
Your Honor, I have really bad hearing, and my hearing aid is not working, so that's why I keep leaning in.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, better.
I sound like that commercial. You start out your briefing by talking about the application of the law to stipulated facts.
Right.
But here, we didn't have stipulated facts.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
There was a trial, in essence, where people testified and the judge had to make credibility determinations.
Right. Well, Your Honor, I said that because at one point the issue I acknowledged to the referee that they were, I wasn't going to contest the relationship as a domestic relationship. Other lawyers have said, they weren't living together, they were part-time seeing each other, you shouldn't have done that. And maybe that's the case. I saw them as intimate partners, and so I didn't want to equivocate on some minor issue.
Okay, so I understand now. You didn't dispute that part of the requirements, but you did dispute the remaining requirements.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. No, I disputed, in a sense, Justice Rosenberg said, if the two issues are they're in a relationship and she's hurt, therefore there's domestic abuse, if that's the end of it, then something needs to change, because I am completely, and I know my client is too, the public policy of protecting domestic partners. No one wants to see women bullied, but there is the, each case is unique, and in this case, it appears, I wasn't there, but it appears that it was the woman in this case who initiates the incident and then uses the power of the bureaucracy to punish Mr. MacArthur. And that's just unfair and unjust. And so I understand the issue of the public policy, but that we want to protect certainly women and children and men too. We want to protect everybody. But he has a right to be safe too in his own home. And I will clarify, I didn't mean to distract by saying she initiated this in the sense that there was a discussion about texts earlier. She initiated the physical part of it.
So, counsel, I'll just follow up real quickly, because we are three judges who have sat in on and heard this type of case in the trial court. Now,
yes.
Today we're on appeal, and that's why
right.
I talked about the standard of review earlier. But, to the extent that what you're describing is a situation where both parties committed domestic abuse on each other, there is the opportunity for both parties to seek an order for protection. And as I read it, your client did not seek an order for protection from Ms. Marks.
Right. Well, that's true.
So, you seem to be describing
her.
A situation where perhaps he had the option of doing that, but he didn't, did he?
Well, Your Honor, because my understanding from what discussions is, he wasn't afraid of her. He was not afraid of her. He was unhappy with her trying to access his personal property. Essentially, you can minimize and say it's a phone, but it's essentially a diary, has everything in your life in it. It's a very valuable thing to somebody. And there is no, whether she intended to break it or not, he has a right to control his property. But I grant you that he probably should have brought the order for protection. But the his experience was, I don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm tired of it. It was Ms. Marks who was seeing the therapist. Mr. MacArthur went to her therapist. So Marks was the one who was having the emotional difficulty. Mr. MacArthur was trying to be supportive and figure out what was going on. And using the term power dynamic, I mean, there's a physical difference between men and women, but I think in most civilized relationships, it's really sort of a more mental power dynamic, and it seems in this case that they were both, having a normal day, then all of a sudden one became very agitated and started the aggression. And the injustice of it, I think, is clear, but I understand where the court's going. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The case is submitted, and we'll have our decision out within 90 days.
Thank you, ma'am.